Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat reporter for the Mercury News, and on today's show, I'll be joined by Charles T. Hamilton to break down James Wiseman's strengths, weaknesses, and his potential fit with the Warriors.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We've been doing these draft prospect breakdowns for weeks now, Charles. It seems like years that we've been doing these. We're finally now getting to James Wiseman. Might be the most polarizing player in this draft, maybe short of LaMelo Ball. But look, as I reported before, the Warriors were impressed with what they saw from Wiseman when they saw him in person in Miami a few weeks ago. But and they're going to consider him if he's there at number two, but it's not a sure thing. There's still some concerns about his game, but Charles, let's start with some of the things that they might like. When you watch James Wiseman, what stands out to you?
Well, first off, you nailed it. Polarizing is the best way to put it because I go back and forth with him almost daily. But the things that stand out is the fact that he's a traditional center in today's NBA game. He's already 7'1". He's got a 7'6" wingspan. He's 240 as a 19-year-old and has the frame to even add more weight, more muscle. But, you know, the term traditional center, I think, kind of makes people think of a Zaza type in that you're big and lumbering and can't move. He, James Wiseman, is, you know, top athlete in the class. You know, if you put him up with Edwards or whoever else you want to throw in there, we're getting some info from the combine that this is a very athletic class, and James Wiseman is one of the top ones. He's just a top prospect. I mean, that's really the best way to describe him. Is he, there's a reason why he was looked at as the potential number one overall pick, and it's mostly because of his physical ability. We only saw so many games of him in college, but he showed kind of exactly what you expected to see out of a guy with that ability. And so that's what really jumps off. There's obviously deficiencies that, you know, we will get to and what makes him polarizing and all that, but it's like a basketball player, a prospect was built in a lab and James Wiseman came out. I mean, that's the main drawing point of him.
Yeah. You look just traditionally in the NBA, 7-footers with his type of athleticism get drafted very high.
Yeah.
That just tends to be the case. And so when he was coming out of high school, there, you know, he looked the part of a future number one overall pick and he was touted as such. And like you said, he played 3 games at Memphis. He played just 69 total minutes. Now I went back and watched all 69 of those minutes that he played, and for a piece that I wrote last week for the Mercury News. And there are things that are so impressive with him. I mean, he runs the floor so well, and he gets down in his stance defensively like a guard. He looks like Marcus Smart almost when he can get down in his stance. He obviously can jump out of the gym. He finishes above the rim. He's like, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. with a catch radius, right? Like Calvin Johnson with a catch radius, where he's just grabbing everything with those hands, and he's dunking everything that's, you know, within 15 feet of him, it seems like. But and all those things are loud and impressive, but there are other parts of his game that to me kind of make me hesitate a little bit more. But when you have that size and that speed, what I wrote was that there is maybe nobody else in the league that has his combination of size and straight line speed other than maybe Giannis and maybe Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
And even those guys aren't listed at 7'2". And James Wiseman's listed at 7'2". He's got the 7'8" wingspan. I mean, he is incredible. And everybody that I talk to with the Warriors says that size and athleticism really stands out even more so in person. And that in-person meeting changed things for the Warriors. It really did. Now, I don't know if it changed things enough for them to make him number one on their board, but he's certainly in the conversation, and I think now's a good time to kind of have that discussion about what Wiseman would look like with the Warriors. But, you know, I think as far as his strengths are concerned, Charles, it's pretty straightforward. The guy can run really fast. The guy could jump really high, and he could dunk everything that you throw at him. And defensively, there's at least going to be a presence there. if you play him like you did in a drop coverage, I think that, you know, he's just he's going to provide interference for opposing ball handlers. He's got a tremendous ability to rebound the ball, which is something that the Warriors needed help with. For all those reasons, I think he's got a pretty high floor, but I also, yes. And obviously that goes along with the high ceiling.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you nailed it, brought it down to the most basic terms, runs really fast, jumps really high, dunks everything, block shots. I mean, and that's the floor for him. And that's something we'll get into later too, is there are other centers who might have similar floors, but the main thing with James Wiseman, that ceiling is so enticing and so high to the point where it's okay. Let's say the offensive game doesn't really progress the way you would expect, but the defensive game does. There's Rudy Gobert potential. There's Karl Anthony Towns potential. That's the ceiling that is getting people, you know, excited about him and why he's looked at as a top prospect and why he was, you know, a number one guy on a lot of boards. And you mentioned his size. That's the other thing with this draft. It's hard, and especially a top prospect who has the ability to turn down stuff at the combine and doesn't have to do the official measurables. But he is a legit 7-plus footer with a massive wingspan. It's not like where Dwight Howard was listed at 7 foot his whole career and he's really, you know, 6'9". This guy is a full-on traditional center, just huge. And the athletic ability on that size, on that body, you don't see that in the NBA. I mean,
And then as far as the high upside goes, too, I mean, you combine that with something we haven't talked about, the shooting potential. When you watch him shoot the ball, and he took 1 3-pointer in college, and he missed it. But the touch looks good. And that's what everybody says. And that's really, I think, where the split occurs is are you buying that he can become a 3-point shooting threat at the NBA level, or are you not? I tend to go with not, but I've been wrong about stuff before. The shooting touch looks really good. People who are buying into it say that they trust that, and that if given the opportunity, look, he doesn't need to be JJ Redick, but if he makes, you know, 1 3-pointer out of three or 1 out of every 2 or every other game or so, then that's going to be effective enough. Now, I don't think he's going to be the shooter that Karl Anthony Towns is, or Anthony Davis even, or somebody like that. But, you know, he could be like at a Joel Embiid level of 3-point shooting, probably. Mm-hmm. Now, there are other concerns that come with the shot selection that we'll get to, but the 3-point shot, are you buying it? The touch looks good, but do you buy that could hit at the NBA level?
I think hit in the same way you talked about. I obviously not going to be Karl Anthony Towns level. 35%, I think, would be like the ceiling for him, not on high volume, but good enough that people have to respect it. Miles Turner level, Joel Embiid level, like you mentioned. I mean, people close out on those guys. And so that's good enough. That's the biggest thing. And even with Joel Embiid, I'm kind of surprised they close out sometimes. But for some reason, that shot is respected enough that they do. So percentages might be a little overrated at times. As long as people respect it enough to defend him out there,
that's and when it what's looks important. Good, and I and think, when it looks and I good, think people respect there. It.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, the free throw shooting wasn't great in those three games, but it was 70%, which is good enough for a big man. And also kind of speaks to the form a little bit, where you feel confident that it could come along to where he's at least allowed to shoot some threes and find out whether he has it or not. But I do believe, I think you nailed it just in that that way, that it'll be good enough that people will respect it.
This is why he's one of the top picks, or at least one of the top prospects in this draft. Like we said, the combination of size, athleticism, and that potential to be able to stretch the floor from the center position. I mean, when you look at what you want from a modern day center, he at least has the contours of what that player needs to be. We will talk about some of his weaknesses next, but first I want to tell you about Built Go. Whether it's for your mental or your physical wall, break through it with Built Go every day. These easy to carry 1.5 ounce packages are perfect to bring in your briefcase or in your gym bag. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy, but without that same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. It comes in 3 delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. So how does Built Go work so well? Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein, a fast absorbing protein that promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you feel better and look better. Here's the offer. Visit builtgo.com and use the promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 30% off of your next order. That's promo code LOCKED for 30% off at builtgo.com. Be sure to check out tomorrow's episode when I'll be joined by Rick Barry, who is the last player selected number 2 overall by the Warriors in the draft. But right now we are getting to James Wiseman's weaknesses and maybe some of the reasons that the Warriors wouldn't take him at number 2. And it's really two things, Charles, that stand out to me. There's a couple of things here and there, but two major concerns I have with him. He looks the part athletically. Yeah. To be able to switch on defense. He does have fluidity. He does get down in his stance. And David Thorpe of True Hoop did a tremendous breakdown of just how important it is for guys like Wiseman to sit down in their stance and be able to move with opposing guards. The potential is at least there. But it's a lot of coulda, woulda, shoulda with him, because he might be one of the worst pick-and-roll defenders I've ever seen at the center position. And the footwork is a major work in progress, as are the rest of his fundamentals. He's really slow on the uptick when it comes to just reading a basic 1-5 pick and roll action that's happening in front of him. He's never really on the right side of the screen. He struggles to stay in front of ball handlers. You would think he'd be at least able, with his sort of athleticism, to close out on ball handlers, even when beat, and get chased down blocks, but he struggles to even do that because he gets beat so badly. Again, by basic pick and roll action. And the fact that he only played 3 games, I'm not knocking him for standing up against the hypocrisy of the NCAA organization, but it is a detriment to his development. And I think that having not played in a competitive basketball game in more than a year is really going to hurt him as far as his learning curve at the NBA level, especially when it comes to defending the pick and roll at the NBA level, because he played 2 non-ranked teams who don't matter. And then Oregon, in the third game, in his last game at Memphis, the only ranked opponent he ever played, and he got into foul trouble really early in that game, and Memphis ended up losing because of that. And I have real, real concerns about whether or not James Wiseman is going to be able to guard just basic pick-and-roll action at the NBA level. You would imagine coaching can help with that, but like I said, it's going to be a steep learning curve for him.
Definitely. And I mean, I think we got a little excited in the first segment because he has traits and ability to get excited about, but a lot of it is based on potential. And you nailed it with the pick and roll defense for a guy who is as athletic as he is. You would expect much better just one-on-one defense, and then just reading the pick and roll for a center, you know, a guy who's played center his whole career. He's not a guy who played guard and had a growth spurt and all of a sudden is trying to learn it. It's alarming. And you mentioned coaching, and yes, he can get better at that, and potentially playing with Draymond, maybe that helps somewhat, but it is not something that you're bringing in and feeling confident about from day one. The shot selection, while it was better in college, where he kind of just stuck to his strengths and stuck to being bigger and faster and stronger than everyone and running the floor, in high school, the shot selection was really poor. You know, kind of wanted to prove he had a jumper that he just didn't have. He can chase too many blocks. He's a great shot, great rim protector and all that, but a lot of rim protectors chase blocks. And, you know, that's part of the problem with JaVale McGee too, not to compare the two, but just that's a comparison that Warriors fans will understand is, you know, like when you chase blocks, you might get it and that's great, but you might also just leave your other teammates out to dry and give up wide open dunks or layups and things like that.
He's rarely in position, which is the problem, whether it's getting beat on the pick and roll from a recognition standpoint, or like you said, chasing blocks, which is a huge concern of his. I mean, you can look at the block numbers, the raw block numbers, but if you could find basically a percentage of blocks to blocks chased, the percentage is going to be low. And what that does is when you get up, when you jump and you leave your feet as a center, now you've got the guard has the pump fake and the reverse option under the basket and all these things. And when you're out of position, like you said, you leave your teammates out to dry. All of a sudden, all of those people have to start rotating and the kick out becomes an option. And it's just like one wrongly chased block can blow up an entire defensive position and give up either an efficient basket at the rim or a three-pointer that you don't want to give up.
Yeah.
And that's really the problem with it. It's not like chasing blocks or giving up mid-range shots. Who cares? When you chase a block, you're giving up two of the most efficient shots in basketball. That's really the problem there. The other thing with him that's a problem is that he has almost zero passing ability.
Yep.
And it's alarming because you could talk about the vertical – the verticality and the vertical spacing all you want. But if you can't make plays out of the roll or pass out of the post, then all that stuff doesn't really matter all that much. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how much gravity you have at the middle of the floor if you can't make your teammates better for it. And he averaged like less than one assist. He had one assist in three games. The one assist he did have happened in the full court. And so in one respect, it's impressive, right? He ran the floor, dribbled like a guard, and then made a pass in semi-transition to the opposite end of the floor. But it was a really easy read, an easy pass, and it wasn't much of a challenge at all. You got to see him do it in the half court, especially if he's going to play for the Warriors, by the way. And yeah. So that to me is the concern. When you talk about chasing blocks and that lack of passing ability and track record of passing. I mean, he shows no vision whatsoever. I mean, he misses wide open cutters routinely, wide open guys, like right in front of him, open for three pointers routinely. It's alarming. And you combine all these things. And this is a guy who likes to compare his game to guys like Kevin Garnett and Chris Bosh. And he looks to me more like Hassan Whiteside,
yeah,
which is not a great player.
It's not. It's not. And also another thing that comes with chasing blocks, and it's been a problem of his, you know, throughout the three games in college and high school, and it gives me terrible flashbacks to Damian Jones, who was a player I initially liked, is that leads to fouls. That he's a guy who fouls a lot. And especially when you're picking in the top two, that's not something you want. You want a guy who can at least stay on the floor when you need him to. He might not be closing games for you in that first year, but you also don't want him to be, you know, picking up three fouls in 2 minutes. And he's had a history of doing that, which not only one hurts the fact that he comes off the floor, but it also, you know, can put your team in the penalty and hurt your team overall. So that's another thing that comes with his aggressiveness when it comes to chasing blocks and pump fakes. You know, to quote, is it Jim Barnett who says it? Leapers leap. And he fits that mold perfectly.
I'm trying to think of any other weaknesses. I mean, as far as the weaknesses are concerned, I do think that they are fixable. Like if they were not fixable, he wouldn't be considered one of these top guys, right?
And if he didn't have these, he'd be the consensus number one overall pick.
Sure.
No question.
Absolutely. And so I think when you talk to draft analysts and scouts and front office folks, that's really the difference. Like it's not... Everything we're talking about with James Wiseman is the same conversation front offices across the league are having about James Wiseman. These are his strengths. They are novel, they are rare, and they are worth our attention. But his weaknesses are glaring and could be problematic. Do we feel like we have the infrastructure to buff out these weaknesses and unlock the player that James Wiseman can be? If the Warriors think that they can, then he should absolutely be in consideration for the number two pick if he's still there. That's what we're going to talk about next here on Locked On Warriors. If you haven't already done so, now is a perfect time to hit that subscribe button to get episodes of Locked On Warriors every day. All right, strengths, weaknesses. I think we pretty much ironed it all out, Charles. But as far as James Wiseman's potential fit with the Warriors, I like I said, you can see the contours of an all-star caliber, you know, generational type center when it comes to James Wiseman. You can also sort of see how he would fit in with Golden State. Memphis asked him to basically play up in coverage and switch out onto the perimeter pretty often. I think at the NBA level, at least for the Warriors, he would be asked to play drop coverage quite a bit, which would, I think, you know, curb some of the issues that he has guarding pick and roll. If you just say, hey, just drop back, sag, guard the paint. This is your area. Give up the mid-range stuff. That's fine. We trust our perimeter defenders to get around and fight over screens and close out on those shooters. Then I think there's something to work with. And look, there's a track record for the Warriors having done that, right? With guys like Andrew Bogut and Zaza Pachulia. They had those players really drop back in coverage. Yeah. And you can have Wiseman do the same thing while, you know, behind closed doors in practice and stuff, you're trying to work on that hip fluidity, you're working on that recognition and all those things so that down the line, 2-3 years, he does become this switchable type of center.
Yeah, definitely. And the fit is kind of obvious. I mean, he could come in because positionally, obviously, they need a traditional center. And when you can get a traditional center with the athletic ability and the, you know, the traits that he has, he, of course, he would fit. He'd be rim runner. He'd be JaVale McGee. He'd be an upgrade over JaVale McGee as a rookie. You know, he could come in and get you buckets, running the floor, lob threat, all that stuff. And I would imagine a better rim defender, rim protector than, you know, JaVale initially. So the fit is there. You can obviously see where he would excel in that role. Defensively, that's where you're nervous. How much do you trust Ron Adams to be able to help develop him behind closed doors, like you said? Are you comfortable playing him 15 to 20 minutes a night? I know that doesn't sound like much, but I mean, for a guy who's going to need time on the floor to develop, like, that's the thing. You have to be able to commit to it, especially with the fact that I don't think you'd send the number 2 overall pick down to the G League, but that's probably not even going to be an option this year. So you have to be able to commit to getting him a certain amount of minutes every night. He may be detrimental to the game at times. He may hurt you at times, but you're going to have to let him play through some of these growing pains that he'll have. Now, the floor is an absolute fit, but the problem is, I think there are guys that might have the same floor later in the draft. You know, if that's all you really are looking to get in that first year, do you really trust that he'll be able to reach his ceiling and become this, you know, all-star, all-league type player, all-NBA type player? Then, yeah, go for it. But as far as that first year production you're going to get from him, I do think there's players that could give you the same a little later in the draft.
Not to mention players that could give you the same in free agency.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, and look, they're not going to have the upside that James Wiseman has. And that's really quite, if you have to really strongly believe in his upside to go ahead and take him at number 2. And by the way, this idea that there's clear playing time, that James Wiseman's going to walk in and be the starter right away, I don't think that's a fair assumption to make. Marquise Chris really endeared himself to this coaching staff last year. And he still has the inside track to being the starter. Kevon Looney, by the way, everything that I've heard is that he is 100% healthy and ready to go. And yep, if that's the case, he's going to have an opportunity to be the starter next year because he was supposed to be the starter going into last year. They've also got Draymond Green, who's going to have to play, I don't know, 8-10 minutes a game in small ball lineups probably. So when you start taking your 48 minutes allotted to the center position, you take, let's say, 10 minutes to Draymond Green at center at the between, you know, maybe 4 to 5 minutes at the end of each half in small ball lineups. Then you give, what, 15 minutes to Kevon Looney, 15 minutes to Marquise Chris. That leaves basically 8 to 12 minutes for James Wiseman. It's not like this guy's going to come in and get 25 minutes per game. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the knock or the thing I keep hearing about people who mock the draft and say that James Wiseman's the cleanest fit for the Warriors at number 2 because it doesn't really make that much sense for them to take a wing because they've got Andrew Wiggins and Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and all these guys on the perimeter. Those guys can get just as many minutes as Wiseman can.
Yeah,
off the bench. And I think Wiseman at first would probably come off the bench just because you want to bring a rookie along slowly. Yeah, this idea that Wiseman's going to walk into a starting spot in 30 minutes per game, no, that's just not going to be what happens. And so, like you said, can he, as much development as he needs, can he get the help that he needs on this team that's going to want to play multiple guys at that position? Of course, the flip side of that, Charles, is that they could draft Wiseman at number 2 and then trade Kevon Looney.
Mm-hmm.
Or and then say, you know what, Draymond Green is getting older. Maybe we don't want to play him at the 5 at all. But that just doesn't seem, at least from what I'm hearing, to be what they want to do. They want to see what Kevon Looney has left. They want Draymond Green playing in small ball units because they think that's their answer to beating big teams like the Lakers, not trying to match up with them necessarily every single minute. They know that they're going to need that small ball unit. So to completely upend your entire roster and philosophy for James, for any prospect, James Wiseman or anybody, just does not seem like a wise thing to do and doesn't seem like something the Warriors would do.
Well, I think you nailed it. That's kind of my thought too, is if they do draft James Wiseman, Kevon Looney's on the move, and then Draymond Green is your switchable center. And Marquise Chris, you know, we'll see how he might even develop into that. But I agree with you. Look, not only does the coaching staff love Chris and Looney, the players love those guys too. So, I mean, if they're on the team, they're going to be, for one, they like them. Two, they're trusted when they're on the floor. Those are guys that are going to get minutes. And the other thing, when you talk about a wing, I agree with you. I don't see the immaculate fit. I know people, I think we kind of are still in the old school philosophy of needing a traditional center, which the Warriors do need, but not in the same sense of getting a wing, because for one, like you said, I think a wing can get the same amount of playing time as James Wiseman. Two, he will get more important playing time because there's no way James Wiseman is going to be good enough to be in that closing lineup, because they play small in their closing lineup. So he's not going to be able to getting those minutes. Not a guarantee that a wing would, a rookie wing would get those minutes, but there's at least the chance he would, where there's just no chance that Wiseman is getting closing minutes. So, and the money. I mean, you talked about it since we started talking the draft. The Warriors do not pay centers the amount of money that the number two overall pick is going to get, especially a guy who's going to have limited minutes. So as enticing as all the talent and all that stuff is, there's just a lot of reasons as to why I don't see it, other than do they think he has the highest trade value? You know,
that's the other thing. I'm glad you bring that up because Wiseman, the tantalizing talent is real. And I think the Warriors have to ask themselves two things. Can we make the most out of James Wiseman? Can we unlock the generational talent that is in James Wiseman? Because it is there. And that's not something you could say about a lot of players in this draft, especially if Anthony Edwards is gone by number two, right? Like, if it's between James Wiseman, LaMelo Ball, and Denny Advia and players like that, then when you really talk about who has the highest upside, I think it's pretty clear that it's Wiseman, especially on the Warriors. And so that's really the context in which we're talking. But then the other thing too is, if a trade comes down the line, by the way, Daryl Morey just got hired by the 76ers. He's got a quick trigger when it comes to trades, and he doesn't care about, and he will trade stars if he thinks that he can make the team better and get another star in return or whatever. So if James Wiseman's available, maybe that's something that happens. If Giannis becomes available by the trade deadline, James Wiseman has more trade value than LaMelo Ball or Denny Avila would for the Bucks.
Is a team I'm looking at. They need center. Maybe they want to jump up from 14 and Marcus Smart gets thrown. You know, there's a lot of different teams. Yeah. Like you said, the talent is so enticing. It's enticing league-wide. It's not just enticing to the top three teams. Like, every team sees the talent and the potential that this guy has.
Yeah. I want just one more note here too, because there's been a lot of reports now that that Wiseman's really going to has impressed the Warriors and is maybe the number two pick that they're trying to make. Everything that I've heard basically is the same thing, that they were split on James Wiseman until the in-person workout. And that was the thing that changed things. And I don't know that it's changed enough for him to be number one on their board, sure thing. But he's definitely going to be in consideration more than he was prior to the in-person workout. That's all I know, because that's all they've told me.
Yeah.
And I think they're still doing their due diligence on what they want to do with this draft. That said, if all of this is a smokescreen, and maybe it is, then it's a great smokescreen, because if Charlotte doesn't move up to number one to get James Wiseman, then maybe they'll just move up to number two to get James Wiseman. And all these trade back scenarios, do the Warriors want to move back from 2 to number 10 and grab Kelly Oubre, 2 to 14 and grab Marcus Smart, 2 to 6 and get John Collins, all these random things that we've heard, maybe the trade back is from 2 to number 3.
Yeah.
And what they get is a future first-round pick, an end of story. And all of this hoopla has been, hey, you know what? At least we got a future asset out of all this smoke. And at number three, you could still take the guy that you want, which is entirely a possibility.
The other thing, three is still a major asset. Trade down again. Like, I think it's going to be at least one trade down. Personally, we'll see what happens. But I think there's going to be some wheeling and dealing going on, because I think the Warriors see that this is an opportunity for him. I mean, this whole offseason draft, because of the situation the league is in, where if teams aren't willing to spend and wanting to get off contracts and this and that, I think the Warriors see that they have an opportunity to do the opposite and, you know, help build their team for the future. But I'm with you. I actually think that move up from 3-2 will still get them something pretty nice. And the other thing too that just came out, James Wiseman has said he doesn't want to play for the T-Wolves. He doesn't want to go play with Karl Anthony Towns. Not that that is the, you know, deciding factor. They could still say, screw it, you've been drafted, you have a contract, you're going to play. But at the same time, it looks a little better for the chance he'll be there at two, where the Warriors could, again, smoke screen and maybe pick up an asset or two in moving out.
It doesn't seem like anybody wants to play for the Timberwolves. They might just not use the pick, and then everybody's going to be there.
I don't blame them.
Charles, this was our last of the first round, you know, sort of top guys that we're going to do. Listeners, we broke down everybody. Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, Denny Advia, Tyrese Halliburton, Devin Vassell. I mean, we went through the gamut. That's all available in your podcast feed if you subscribe to Locked On Warriors. Next week, we're going to take a look at some of these second-round draft prospects and some of the guys that we think the Warriors could target. They've got two second-round picks. That will be up next Tuesday. For now, remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate, review, and say nice things about the show. Thanks to Built Go for sponsoring today's show. You could send your comments and questions to me on Twitter at WC Goldberg or email them to me at wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and I'll see you here tomorrow morning.